Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I am your host, Jordan Schmidt. Mark no longer works here, and it's for two reasons. One, Mark designed an episode so bad that he could not take it any longer. And two, which is similar to one, Mark designed an episode so bad that I fired him. Now, Mark, I've let you be on the show today because I want you to understand that this kind of thing can't be tolerated. And in doing so, instead of actually allowing you to leave this podcast and say, do something sensible with your life, I figure we just do the episode and have to actually release it with these three cartoons so that you know not to pull this again. I hope that's a fitting enough punishment for what you just had me sit through.
Are you angry at me?
Angry is a strong word. I'm not angry in the sense that, like, my mood has been completely shattered or anything. I mean, these at the end of the day are just cartoons. They're just, you know, you watch a bad cartoon, it's fine. You know, you watch three bad cartoons, okay. I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. Because we've had 100+ episodes of somewhat quality content. You know, we cover enough Looney Tunes cartoons, we cover enough Warner Brothers cartoons, and you get things that are actually good and that actually, like, you know, are interesting to cover, that have things that you can take from it and, you know, talk about them on a podcast for an hour or so. And you've given me three cartoons where I don't know what to say about these other than, well, this is awful. I hope no one does anything remotely like this ever again. I'm not mad. I'm just frightened that you think this is an okay thing to do. And that if I don't say anything, you'll do more episodes like this. I'm doing this for your own good as well as mine.
And I appreciate you going that extra mile.
Oh, of course. No, I knew you would.
So the three shorts we're looking at today come from the Seven Arts division of Warner Brothers.
Which is why I'm disappointed.
Yes, which came after the period of the Patty Freeling. Well, kind of the Patty Freeling. I'm not quite entirely sure what you would qualify this as. But it was a point in time where things got even worse for the Warner's animation division, if you can believe that.
Because DePatie Freeling, we've covered some DePatie Freelings. Those are bad. These somehow are worse. And the degrees of how much worse they are, it's honestly worth studying, I have to say. Because enough of our episodes are like, you know, okay, these are the best of the best. This is what these do right. This is what more cartoons should do. These are things cartoonists should never do. You know, you should learn how not to do these things, and you should learn how not to make cartoons like the three that we've done here. Not that they're all completely terrible. There's a couple of interesting moments here, but this is probably the single worst assortment of cartoons that we've had in a long time. And we just had a really sorry set very recently, actually, that was nearly sorrier until Mark grabbed a slightly better cartoon. And I hope that you guys get something out of this, because the only thing I've gotten out of it is a couple hours of my life I'm never going to get back.
So the shorts we're covering today are Speedy Ghost to Town.
Yeah, that's your first clue. Speedy Ghost to Town. And if you think that's infuriating, just wait until we actually cover that one. Sorry, go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry. I'm disappointed.
Merlin the Magic Mouse, followed by Bunny and Claude, We Rob Carrot Patches.
You'll notice that, I don't even know what you'd notice after that. You'll notice you we're not happy.
You know, it's interesting because recently, Looney Twitter got really invested. There's a user by the name, I'm going to look it up because he did actually comment under one of our comment tweets recently.
Ah.
Yes, named Key the Drummer from Fifi. From Fifi, I apologize if I mispronounced that. Where they watched all the shorts, all 1,000 from 1930 to 1969. And Buddy, if you're listening to this, and please tell us your comments about these three, because I am fascinated. Because listen, we look at Looney shorts three at a time, random spaces in time, some differences in quality, but for the most part, it's pretty consistent. I want to know the thought process of someone who watched all the 50s, all the golden era, the Chuck Joneses, the What's Opera Docs, the Rapid Fires of the world, and as they reached the end, they had to look at these three shorts and go, well, they're a part of the Looney heritage, hence I have to watch them. So please, if you're listening, give your thoughts for these, because we're utterly fascinated by, frankly, anyone deciding of their own free will, which even then isn't quite free will, of watching these, choosing to watch these three. Because no one in their right mind would willingly choose to watch these three. I highly doubt that Jerry Beck has ever sat down and went, okay, I have to write a segment about Speedy Ghost to Town. I highly doubt he ever thought about doing that.
No, because he's good to himself.
Exactly.
This is not the best period of Warner Brothers history, but to quote someone who's far too horny for her own good, if we didn't talk about it, it'd be like if it didn't exist. And so we have to present these as if they happened. By the way, man, do I love that book.
And I'm not a lesbian.
No, let's make that clear. Despite everything else that has ever been said or featured about me, I am not a lesbian.
Whoopi Goldberg can't stop showing up in the news cycle. It's almost a little bit concerning.
The Whoopster.
The Whoopster. All right.
All right. Let's get into this sad tale.
Yeah.
Speedy Ghost Town. First of all, in case it wasn't clear, that title sucks. And I'll explain why it sucks, actually, after I'm done with this one. Speedy Ghost to Town was released on July 29th, 1967. I have quite the amusing on this day for this one.
Okay. All right.
Oh, man. It's good. It's from the makers of Ecuador and the Philippines.
Damn, okay.
During the fourth day of celebrating the city's 400th anniversary, the city of Caracas, Venezuela, is shaken by an earthquake, leaving approximately 500 dead. So that means somebody had to say, so we're going to celebrate our 400th anniversary by doing 4 days of celebrations. Not one. One would be pretty cool, but no, we have to make it a four-day thing, exactly four. God knows if anyone will be mad at us if we do it for more than one day. And then you think they must have gotten really mad when on the fourth day of the 400th anniversary special, 500 people died. Like, no, we're going with a four thing. Like, once you, okay, 399, 400, okay, good, stop there, stop the count. No, what's this 401? And then slowly, as it just totals upward, it's like, okay, 450, that could still work. Oh, 451, oh. Stop, guys. At this point, you're just going over to where the earthquake is. Just stay where you are. Although I will say 500, that's a pretty round number. Oh, yeah, it says approximately 500, so it wasn't exactly, but...
who knows?
It'd be easier if they said approximately... it would be actually cooler if they just said more than 400, because then it would have worked. 40, you know, 400th anniversary, fourth day, 400 dead. Then it would have worked with the narrative, but no, you know, whatever deity caused the earthquake was like, no, we're going to mess up this. Just for that 100 more than you were expecting.
No one ever expects 100 more people to die.
No. And then this is something that's true in most situations. Anyway, we apologize to anyone in Venezuela.
So we're starting with people dying is what you're saying.
Yes, we are starting with people dying. On 9/11, we're starting with people dying. Because that's what Rudy would have wanted.
This is going to be terrible. Okay, so who directed?
It already is terrible. We're doing a Seven Arts episode. What did you expect? Sunshine and roses and daisies? I'll give you this. Two really either sad or horrifying songs came out on this day. We're number one on the charts.
For fuck's sake. What?
Actually, no. One of them is marginal, but the other one is a very sad song that I like. Number one in the U.S. Number one in the U.S., Light My Fire by The Doors.
Okay, not bad. Not bad.
Not bad at all. Number one in the UK is one of the greatest sad songs ever. A Whiter Shade of Pale by Procol Harum.
Editor Mark, you want a downer music moment?
It's actually a really good song. Like, it's, you've probably heard it without knowing. It's the one that goes, you know, we split the light fandango. Cause cartwheels cross the floor. You know. I was feeling high to see the sick.
Anyways,
look it up. It's a really good song. I would actually say that would be number one over Light My Fire, and that's a controversial statement, but
it is.
Light My Fire has a good verse, a good chorus, and then just sort of jams for 5 minutes. You know, like, it could have actually been a song that decides, you know what, we got something good going here. Let's decide to just do lots of guitar and keyboard solos. People are getting lit anyway. Let's just have fun. So, Speedy Ghost to Town. Every time I see the title of this, I feel like I want to just claw out my own eyes. Speedy Ghost to Town. Mother of Pearl. Directed by... Okay, this was the first Warner Brothers cartoon directed by Alex Lavi, who was a Seven Arts guy that I think had come up through this sort of unit and was given... the reins of the animation unit after Freeling and DePatie left. The stock writer for a lot of these was Cal Howard. This was the first Warner Brothers cartoon to be released after the division was bought by Seven Arts. So, in case you don't know, divvied up and shut down in the early 60s, and then first Freeling and David DePatie run for 3 years, and then they decide to leave, and then it's left with no one. So Seven Arts, which was an independent sort of production company that had done co-productions with Warner Brothers and Fox and all the big studios, they produced movies like The Bible in the Beginning, I believe, and would later produce The Dirty Dozen, and would eventually end up, it would end up being a lot of the U.S. distributor of a lot of Hammer horror films, you know, the Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, Dracula films, stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, they were an actual film studio, and I think because Warner was sort of phasing out their own unit and, you know, it was becoming more of an out-of-house and more TV-based thing. It was like, all right, let's just have this smaller production company handle everything. And so that's what Seven Arts is. And so this is the first one that is officially a Seven Arts production, even though it is very much a Warner Brothers cartoon, as evidenced by the opening sequence, which is now the new, you know... That one, the horrifying minor key early reel along or whatever.
Yes,
very Gorenbrook there. But
yes, the signal for kids everywhere to turn off the TV.
Okay. Yeah, much like the signal of the Tom Head MGM logo. That oh, okay, you're not gonna like this one. So yeah, this is a Speedy and Dip. Okay. I forget, was one of the cartoons we covered prior to this a Speedy and Daffy cartoon? Was that a DePatty Freeling one?
So, yeah, that's the reason why I chose this, is because it's kind of a good segue between the DePatty Freeling era and the Seven Arts era, because one of the big things that DePatty Freeling was like, ah, yes, let's do this, is pairing up Daffy Duck with Speedy Gonzales. They were never good.
I don't understand why they would pair them up in the first place, other than, hey, these are two popular characters. Let's put
exactly
them together. Like, ducks don't eat mice. They eat bread and vegetables. Speedy eats cheese. They have nothing alike. And also, like, they don't really establish why Daffy wants to catch Speedy. Is it because he's the fastest mouse in Mexico and his ego is like, oh, I can catch that? They never really, these are all tenuously strung along, including this one. And it's frustrating to me that, you know, they're just picking up after DePatty Freeling left off, and they're just like, well, we're not going to explain this either.
I honestly, it's very possible that this show was already, like, in development, or the idea was already in development by the time they switched over. So they're like, here, to take this. It's a Daffy Speedy cartoon. We like doing them. You guys do something with it.
And, you know, if it works for us, it should work for you guys.
And, like, listen, best case, the absolute best case scenario would be, you know, they're given this tired Daffy Speedy plot, and you would think new creatives are in, maybe they improve upon it, they do something different with it. I don't know. But no. No, it's the equivalent of what's like a recent example of something that is happening. It's like, okay, I'll go to SpongeBob, I guess. It would be like when Hillenburg left SpongeBob, they're like, okay, here you go, here's SpongeBob. You know what to do. Don't do anything stupid, and then they do stupid shit like Elasticsquare Panis or whatever the fuck, you know, it just gets worse, or it loses its luster. Now, I'm not comparing later SpongeBob to Seven Arts Productions, because at least with later SpongeBob, the animation was still good. Seven Arts, you don't get that.
It even says, like this was the beginnings of them using less backgrounds, less character motion, more stock sound effects. Like, it's becoming a lot more minimal and similar to what Hanna-Barbera and Filmation were doing at the time. And the degree of skillful animation is done. There's no room for that in any of these Seven Arts ones, and especially in this one. So, to give you an idea of the forethought that we're going with in the beginning of this Seven Arts episode, so here is where we start this cartoon. Speedy Gonzales and his cousin Miguel are wandering around the desert for some reason. We don't know why. We don't know how they got to the desert. Daffy appears from behind a cliff. He is also in the desert. We don't know what he's doing there. He sees Speedy Gonzales is there, recognizes Speedy Gonzales, wants to see what he's up to. We don't know what he wants with Speedy all of a sudden. We don't know what he's going to do with him. Even as the story progresses and we find out, okay, Speedy is looking for this gigantic cheese mine off the coast of this ghost town that we're centering in on, we don't really know where they are, what they're doing there. We don't even get a sense of who Miguel is and why Speedy would want to bring him to this cheese mine. And we don't know if this is coming off of a previous Daffy and Speedy cartoon in this. We don't know if it's near where Speedy lives. We don't know shit. Like,
So, Jordan.
Yeah.
As we've learned when we were children, what are the 5 W's of basic storytelling? Who, what, where, and why, with how being thrown in there sometimes?
You missed when, but yeah.
I missed when. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know when this is either. We don't know if it takes place in the fucking future or anything. But, or in the past. But they make those clear in later Seven Arts cartoons. Like, hey, we're in ancient Rome! You know.
Yes. This short, from the get-go, tells basic story structure and explanation.
It's nothing. We have really nothing. And what we do get, and then after explaining nothing, we get, honestly, then the cartoon thinks we need, because we have this sort of reveal of what the plot is. Like, hey, we're going over this this cheese mine. And there's two things here. Because the whole thing is where he reveals this little nugget of cheese that he's got, Speedy does. And Miguel, and they have this exchange here. They have, jump in frijoles. That's the real stuff. You said it, and there's plenty more where this came from. Okay, if you could make this look any less like a drug deal, that would be great.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And then the joke of this is, because we obviously know it's cheese, and if you don't know it's cheese by the end of this, like the whole thing is that, like, it's supposed to be a surprise by the end of this. Oh, it was cheese. But, like, it's a Speedy Gonzales cartoon. Of course he wants cheese. It's just they don't say it, because the whole thing is a misunderstanding, and Daffy sees this from outside the window and thinks it's gold, and thinks that Speedy Gonzales has an entire gold mine.
Which,
that he's hiding.
What would a mouse want with gold? Dude, Daffy is so fucking stupid in this.
That's the other thing. Daffy has, like, a third of his usual intelligence. He is driven only by greed. He's been flanderized. He's just greedy and wants money and is mad and manic and isn't any of the personality Daffy that we know about. But yeah, no, Daffy thinks it's gold and thereby wants to get Speedy because he wants to find the gold. Not as funny as drugs. I mean, it's the 60s. Go nuts. But yeah, so, but the whole thing is that, like, okay, we obviously, if we're smart people that have seen enough Warner Brothers cartoons, we know it's cheese. It shouldn't be a shock by the end of this, and of course, the way they do it later, it's like, oh, it's cheese, not gold, you dummy. And it's like, what else would were there really people in the audience going, oh, that's gold? Then you begin to see the other problem with this cartoon, which is gags that don't work as well because the animation isn't as good. Like, you have this gag where, They see Daffy outside the window, and there's the timing of the window closing on Daffy's head, which would have worked or had the animation of the window closing not been so simple. Then you get the guy, because the whole thing is that they're now in this ghost town, and they're chasing each other around this ghost town with abandoned bars and buildings and things like this. And
which, let's just say what it is. It's a ghost town because they didn't want to animate patrons in these locations.
Yeah. Like,
it's a budget.
They didn't think they could do people, but and a budget thing. Yeah. When the gags start flying, like, you feel like there's a couple of steps missing. Like, okay, you have this gag here, where Daffy's running after him, and Speedy and Miguel tie the end the strip of a player piano to the back of him, and so it sucks him in to the player piano as it plays. And it's not as effective as it should be because it shows it Daffy getting flung into the piano, but not what happens when he does. Alex Lovey doesn't seem to be a see-the-consequences kind of director. He's like, all right, and he gets flung into the piano, and next gag! Give us the funny. Where's the funny in that? All right, he doesn't even get hurt.
Where's the consequence?
Yeah.
Where's the consequence?
There's not a lot of that in any of
these. This goes back to Wile E. Coyote. It's all about setup and payoff. You need the punchline. Sometimes you don't need to see the Coyote gang blown up, but a lot of the times, that's what sells the joke. This doesn't even try that. It's just very much...
No, it's just like, all right, this gag happens, things break, and things get kind of damaged, and on, we're on to the next!
We can summarize this stuff better than how they write it, essentially. That's what it feels like.
Because it feels like, all right, this would be funny to have them do, and, you know... Like, okay, you have a gag here where it's like, okay, Daffy sees Speedy sitting in the bottom of a barrel. So he throws in a grenade.
Oh, I hated this so much.
But it's the old gag where he throws the pin instead of the grenade. And all right, that alone is like, okay, we've seen it before. You know, that would have been enough. But the shot of Daffy springing back up with the grenade before it goes off, it's almost annoying. It's like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to just make sure that, like, we didn't need a reaction shot. We could have just had it blow up and then him, you know, go on to the next. It's a Wile E. Coyote gag. It's just, you don't need to have Daffy vamp.
It's so, and again, Daffy's not this stupid.
No.
It looks like he did it on purpose. It didn't look a mistake. It looked like he was like, okay, go throw the pen. Yeah.
You're missing some steps, because if you actually had those steps built in, you would have actually, like, you know, do something funny that's the reason why he throws the wrong thing.
Oh, like anticipation. Like, he throws the pin and he's like, yeah. Oh, no! Or something.
If you have the right writers and timing people, and it won't turn out like this. And again, so many gags. Yeah, but
they timing people.
Yeah, that's the thing. They all left. So many gags in this next bit, like the horseshoe gag, the bullhead gag, the bar gag, they just go by without doing anything subversive whatsoever. None of this is funny or interesting. And meanwhile, you have Speedy doing his thing. You have Miguel with no character other than just like, hey, Speedy, I wonder what's going to... I just...
There are moments where they just cut to Miguel like applauding and cheering. Even I can be like, oh, you're doing this to kill time.
Yes, literally.
Yeah, you're just doing this to kill, like, extra 30 seconds. Because you have to reach that 7-minute or 6-minute runtime, whatever the fuck.
You have this ketchup gag, where the whole thing is like...
God, I hate this.
I hated this, too, because the whole thing is like he thinks in the ketchup bottle, and the outcome of this is, oh, and he gets ketchup all over him. Like, oh, no, he has ketchup all over him. All right, he gets him off and cleans it up. You know what it should have been? It should have been hot sauce.
Because
if you get hot sauce in your eye, oh, brother.
But then that would require the character to move in incredibly fast and exaggerated ways, and they can't do that. It's like they had enough people to do the basic animation plotline of these things, but they didn't have enough animators on hand to do actual good, extravagant expressions and gag work. So I have these basic-ass gags here that just pisses you off, because you can see both from both past experience watching Looney Tunes cartoons and also just your own goddamn imagination of, wait, no, it should be like this. And listen, we've said in the past, the criticism of, well, it should have been this, is not a valid criticism. It's lazy. However, when it comes to shit like this, you can't help but go with every single gag. Oh, well, that should have been hot sauce. Or, oh, it should have been anime like this. Or, oh, why didn't it just do that? You just can't help it.
Because they're not trying. They're doing what doesn't tax the animation. And it shows.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And after that trail of gags that don't really lead anywhere, we get the reveal that we already sort of figured out earlier, that the mine is full of cheese. I skipped over a couple gags that didn't work, but
it
didn't work. Yeah. They didn't work at all. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why this is a big reveal. It was obvious from us at the beginning. And what am I to make of the reaction to this, which is this shot of Daffy crazily bouncing around the desert yelling, cheese? What is going on?
Oh, cheese, cheese, cheese. Cheese, cheese. Gee whiz, Speedy. What's the matter with that loco duck?
I don't know. I guess maybe he don't like cheese.
It's a half-budget version of Daffy woohooing out of the frame. That's essentially where it is. Though I will say, the expression work on Daffy when he realizes that it's cheese is like the one moment in this where the expression work actually is a little bit alive. It's the one moment where I'm like, okay, there's a little bit of something there. And then we cut the cheap-ass animation of Daffy jumping. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's just it's not great. And then it just limps off with his ending line as well. It's like, you know, Speedy's like, oh, I guess he doesn't like cheese. And da-da-da-da, you know, just, you know, then where's it leave our heroes anyway? It's like, oh, yeah, you know, they have the cheese now. And then what next? Why were they getting the cheese? Who cares? There was no conflict, no structure, no plot, no escalation, and a shit ending. Speedy barely did anything. Daffy wasn't a good foil, and the conflict was avoidable if Daffy could think of for just a moment. Miguel did nothing. I didn't laugh for a single moment of this, and there was really no reason for it to exist. Plus, and I think this is similar to a criticism you had about a short earlier this year, but the title is Speedy Ghost to Town, and there's no ghosts in this. Like, I was expecting, like, okay, they go to this ghost town, and there's the ghost of Western heroes, and then the shenanigans there. But there were no ghosts. It was just a ghost town. It's like, hey, this place is empty. It's just Daffy and Speedy running around an empty town, which is much less funny because there's not a lot for them to work off of. Everything's inert. Like, the possibility is that even the title teases are better than what actually happened in this.
Yeah, this show was lame. I didn't like what they did with Daffy. I'm just we both really like Daffy. It just sucks to see him in the situation where... Yeah. He's essentially giving just the most generic of villain roles. And even then, it's the most who gives a fuck. You know? What I don't quite understand, frankly. Because when they did the Daffy Speedy cartoons at the beginning, because Daffy was very popular and Speedy was very popular. Did they ever consider what would happen if, as they're making these cartoons, the popularity of both characters goes down significantly because you're making shitty cartoons with them?
And I don't think they thought that far ahead.
They ever once think, wait a minute, we're 7 cartoons into this team up, and according the chart says that both of our characters' popularity are getting lower, and that people are liking our competitors better. What do we do? No, they were too set in their cheap ass ways, and it's really unfortunate because especially with the stuff we looked at around this time later with, you know, the Groovy Ghoulies and the Easter Eggsland special. It took Daffy a long time to recover from this era.
Yeah,
and. He's doing fine now. I sound like I'm talking about someone who went to rehab, but he's doing better. And as for Speedy, well, yeah. Kind of got the short end of the stick there, buddy, but oh well. I didn't like this cartoon one bit. It was
very terrible. I give it a 1 out of 5.
Yeah, same. Yeah, it's a 1 out of 5 as well. It's all right. Let's move on, you know, because you know these are two characters that well established that everybody knows. So around this time in 7 Arts, they're like, we need new characters. So this is one of them. This right here is Merlin the Magic Mouse. Came out on November 18th, 1967. Guards, what happened on that day? Tom Gordon, pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, was born on this day.
Yeah, did you know, Mark, that You ever heard Tom Gordon had a Stephen King book written based on?
Really?
Yeah, because Stephen King is, of course, you know, big Boston Red Sox fan. And Tom Gordon, he came up with the Royals, and he was big with the Red Sox in the 1990s. He was their closing pitcher. And Stephen King writes a book in this period called The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. And it's about a young girl, like between 8 and like 12, like probably closer to like 8 or 9, that gets abandoned in the woods by her parents, I believe, and has to find her way to safety, and her only solace is an imaginary friend that takes the form of her favorite MLB pitcher, Boston Red Sox closer Tom Gordon. He was clean by this point. Stephen King, that is, as well as Tom Gordon.
Okay.
I believe this is a book that several people have tried to adapt over the years. It's hard to adapt The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon because Tom Gordon's an actual person, and you'd have to get like somebody to play Tom Gordon. And it would also have to be like, you know, oh, this takes place in 1996 when Tom Gordon was in his heyday or something like that. I believe that Mike Flanagan was trying to make it. Let me briefly look this up.
Is there even enough plot in that book for a movie adaptation they were trying, or was this for TV that they were trying to do?
It's for film.
Is there enough material for a film?
Yeah. It's a whole book.
Huh.
So apparently, George A. Romero of Night of the Living Dead fame was trying to get this made in the mid-2000s. Right. And it didn't end up happening. And then in 2019, Romero's production company, including some people that also worked and produced the It movies, were planning on picking it up. The last I'd heard of it was that in 2020, Lynn Ramsey, who did We Need to Talk About Kevin and You Were Never Really Here, was on it to direct it.
Okay.
I think it's still in development, and I don't know if it's going to happen.
I mean, I once read a book called Memoirs of an Imaginary Friend, which is about a child who is, I think he's presumably on the spectrum, has an imaginary friend, gets kidnapped by his mother's friend, because I think she had a miscarriage or something, so she kind of went a little bit off the deep end. And it's all about, like, the imaginary friend talking to the boy, and, spoilers, the only way to save the boy was that the imaginary friend essentially had to essentially have the kid no longer believe in him in order to break free or something like that. And it's a good book, but yeah, it's interesting.
But yeah, no, Tom Gordon had a very long MLB career as a reliever, played with the Phillies and the Yankees toward the end of his career. Two of his sons have played in the major leagues. One of them, from his first marriage, Dee Strange Gordon, played with the Dodgers, Marlins, Mariners, Reds, and Nationals up until a couple years ago. His younger son, whose name is Nick Gordon, currently plays for the Minnesota Twins and gets injured every year. That has been your usual info dumping, courtesy of your old pal Jordan.
You know, this is an episode that needs it.
Yeah, Tom Gordon is better than any of these. As is the book, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. If I recall correctly, that's a pretty good one.
Should we just intercut this episode with us just reading the book?
No.
Like, what the? No.
No.
What the hell? The Seven Arts episode is 3 hours long. What the hell do they do? Oh. Anyways, so Merlin the Magic Mouse was directed by Alex Lovey. Written by Carl Howard. Yeah, you know, we're in the same people. And here's what's interesting. Mel Blanc is not in this.
No, he's not.
As much as I would love to joke that they officially were too cheap to hire Mel Blanc, it's just an instance where Mel wasn't in that day, or so they wanted to try something different. So instead, they called upon Dawes Butler.
Yeah, I think this is the last one he did for them.
Because you know they ran out of money to get him back. Yeah. As evident by, this is the first Merlin the Magic Mouse cartoon, not the last. They did others, but they didn't get Dawes Butler back. They got someone else to voice Merlin the Magic Mouse. And who exactly Merlin the Magic Mouse is an impression of W.C. Fields.
Yeah, because by the 60s, they're going to be swimming in that, the kids are.
Let's see. I'm just going to look up here.
W.C. Fields was a comedian and entertainer in the 1930s. He played a lot of sort of too cool for school, stuck-up sort of old vaudevillian types. Not all of his work has aged well. In fact, almost none of his work has aged well.
You know, it's so funny. It's like, oh, the kids would love him. W.C. Fields died in 1946. That's 21 years ago from then to the release of this cartoon. So, literally, what, two generations have passed by this point who maybe don't know who W.C. Fields is. So the Warren Division at this point was like, you know what we should do? Brand new character. Impressions are just funny voices that aren't cartoon characters yet. So here's what we'll do. We'll do a W.C. Fields mouse. No, but like, No, hold on. I mean, Chief Wiggum from The Simpsons
is a bad Edward G. Robinson.
Yeah.
When you say it like that, it's just really impressions are just funny voices that aren't characters yet.
Bad impressions, I should say, are cartoon character voices that have been.
Dawes Butler was not exactly known for his W.C. Fields, as evident by this cartoon.
Yes. Yes. So. Oh, and also Sam Katz in this. It's his last appearance in a Warner's cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
He's just a random ass cat. Oh no, yeah. Gives a shit. So we open the credits here. Bill Lava does the music. Yep, we're in hell. Layout by Bob Gibbons was still working for the studio at this time. I'm like, dude, what are you doing here? You're an actual talent. What the hell are you doing here? Your layouts are not being appreciated in this cartoon, Bob.
No.
Get out. So it's Merlin the Magic Mouse. See a little poster that says he's appearing at the Baiju Theater. And it's Merlin and his sidekick, Second Banana.
Now appearing, Merlin the Magic Mouse. That's me, Second Banana, the world's greatest magician. Come, my fans. Await within. Okay, my boy, go count the house.
Right, Merlin. Boy, you're improving. The audience is double what it was last night.
Are you laughing yet? No?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and it's through all of this that, you know, he has Second Man to count the audience. We look in. And there's one cat sitting in the audience, to which Sam Banner says, well, you never believe this. It's double the house tonight. You've doubled the attendance.
It's double what it was last night. And then he goes back and explains it.
Yes. Just in case you're too stupid, which we're not.
Let the audience think.
And, okay, it's a cat in the audience. So what does Second Banana say? Hey. Ugh. When he finds out you're a mouse, there'll be trouble.
There's gonna be trouble. How dumb do you think this audience is?
He's a cat. He's a mouse. We can put the two together, you fucking moron.
Yes.
So,
Jesus Christ.
And like, it's like, oh, I'll put on my disguise. It's a large mustache with hardy har har.
Yeah, that'll work.
W.C. Fields even have a mustache. What are you even doing?
Yeah, and by the way, the very first thing I wrote down in my notes here, once Merlin the Magic Mouse started speaking, is, Dawes, what are you doing?
How nice! How nice!
Last night you played to an empty house. Tonight there's one. One cat.
A cat?
Uh-huh. And when he finds out you're a mouse, there's gonna be trouble.
Fiddledy-stacks. I'll put on one of my clever disguises, and he'll never know I'm a mouse.
Because in doing this W.C. Fields voice, he's just drawing out the ends of his sentences. And doing a lot of talking like this. And it's not exactly working for me.
It's not enthralling either. It's not like a really punchy voice that'll stay with you.
A really weird inflection.
It is. The show begins, and the very first line that Sam the cat has in this is booing. Hey, you can't boo this cartoon, motherfucker. You're in it. Can boo the cartoon.
Although I will say, I did like the cat's puzzled expression when he hears the applause machine, but knows he's the only one there. He's like, huh?
Yes. Like, what the fuck? It's like, that was good. I like that. There's not a lot of things I like this. That was a decent cartoon. Oh. I mean, that was a decent moment. So we then get, you know, Merlin the Magic Mouse doing some magic tricks. And they go horribly.
Yeah. He
tries to pull a rabbit out of a hat. And it's a white rabbit. Because legally, there's no way in hell he can get away with a Bugs Bunny cameo. If they did, they'd get shot. Or sued. I don't fucking know. I still don't understand that, by the way. I, for the life of me, I would never understand. Like, no, we can't use bugs anymore. Why? Because why? Because I told you so.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways. So, you know, that falls apart. And, okay, so then for this next one, he requires a member from the audience. And, of course, the cat gets brought up, and it's at this point that I'm going, so he's now doing this for no one.
Yes.
It's just, they're doing this magic trick for nobody's benefit. What's going on here? Because it's not like, okay, when we open the cartoon, it's not like Merlin the Magic Mouse hates the cats. It's very much like, oh, there's a cat in the audience, I'll put on a disguise, that's fine. The mouse doesn't go in and go, oh, it's a cat. Ooh, I'm gonna show him because there should have been a scene in the beginning where the cat chases Merlin or something. Oh, no, we don't get any of that.
Yeah, we should have had something to begin with and had this sort of, like, dynamic.
But no, so now the mouse is just being a dick. And the whole thing is that they can't find the rubber saw.
Yeah.
And so Merlin goes, oh, there's a saw over there. I'll go get it. And it's a real saw. As he slices into him, and the cat, who, I'm just going to say it now, folks, the cat's the best thing in this picture. It's not much, but there's something to him. There is a bit of a character to this cat. It's one thing. And he's like, oh, hey, that hurts. And then just taking that going, hey, Merlin, look. I found the rubber saw. I was like, oh, thank you.
Yeah. You see, there's a way of making this gag work. But, I mean, he doesn't really hurt the cat in a funny way. He doesn't have a funny reaction to finding out he used the wrong saw. It's not orchestrated correctly. It just happens, and there's no real interesting pieces of it. And then right after that, it's like, okay, and oh, it's a cat. It's a mouse. Oh, I guess we have to chase now. And then now they're chasing for the benefit of no one.
And then Merlin uses actual magic. He turns the lights off, turns them back on. The cat's in chains. The cat then just bites on the chains, and he's free. So nothing really funny happened there. Gives him fake flowers, stick of dynamite. You know, he blows the fuse. Oh, ha! You almost got me. Slow, awkward pan out to reveal.
Yeah, it's like, oh, there's another fuse. Yeah.
That could have been funny if the pacing was better.
Yeah.
And then they reach this, the wall. There's a brick wall. Oh, no. Merlin, I'll use my Indian rope trick. And immediately I'm going, for the love of God, you're already sucking. don't put in a Native American stereotype for fuck's sake. And they don't. It's
they
just
don't.
A stupid rope gag. But
I mean, the rope trick, it's just an amusing enough setup, but like the punchline is just him falling back down, and like there's no like, okay, he fell down, and then we go on to that. There's no consequence.
No. And then I believe they go on and then have the magic carpet. Right, takes out the magic carpet, goes, okay, Second Banana, get on the carpet, flies off, leaving Second Banana behind. The cat's running.
Oh, wait, no, I'll come back, yeah.
As they're flying off, Merlin's like, okay, Second Banana, where are we going to now? Like, oh, Peoria. We're going to Peoria. Like, ah, yes, Peoria it is. Pan over, and the cat has tied balloons to a boat.
We didn't see him get them, because that would be too funny.
No, as he's rowing away, he's like, oh, I'll be there too. As the cat goes off in the distance, as Merlin and Second Banana fly back in, they're like, on second thought, we could open in Hoboken.
Heh. Yeah, just go the other
one. And then that's where it ends.
A really weak way of getting rid of the cat.
Do you know how many cartoons you covered where it's going so well and the ending just sucks?
Yeah.
You know, those suck. That could turn, in my opinion, that could turn like a 4.5 to a 4, or if it's really bad, a 3.5. You know, it can really...
Yeah, like the Tweeting the Beanstalk one, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, which... is a really good, that's a great example. It's a really good cartoon, and the ending just fucking sucks. This, what I hate about this fucking cartoon, and the other ones, the shorts already suck, right? They're already terrible. They couldn't have the damn courtesy of trying to think of a funny ending line for any of these shorts. Well, two of these shorts, as we'll get into with the next one. They just end so badly with the worst punchlines I've ever heard. Because what the fuck is funny about instead going to New Jersey? There's nothing funny about New Jersey.
Because they're going the other way. Because instead of going that way in the country, they gotta go that way in the country.
Oh.
Geography. Yeah, that's what we fucking need.
Fucking hell.
No.
The animation... in some point is a little bit better than what they usually do. The cat's the best character in this. How exactly were WB expecting audiences to care in 1967 about W.C. Fields if he were a mouse? The world may never know.
And they made four more of these as well. Did not work at all, this cartoon. I didn't like any of these the two new characters. I didn't like any of them, their characterizations. I thought... I didn't see what I think I get what Dawes Butler was trying to do with Merlin, but it did not work at all. His slow, deliberate delivery as Merlin wasn't funny at all. I did not like Second Banana either. He's just worse Boo Boo. He sounds like Boo Boo on Quaaludes. Honestly, he's like, yeah, why don't we go around and see if you know the reindeer is whatever the fuck. Even the gags felt half-hearted. It didn't work at all, and just. Seemed to spit in the face of anybody that thought it would work or that would do things properly. Again, they made four more of these. This is the basis for a successful Seven Arts character.
And he would return in contemporary products. He's in episodes for some pre-mysteries, apparently. And he's in Tiny Toons University. So, man, if you thought W.C. Fields' impressions were bad in 1967... they certainly are far away in 2023. So, oh man.
Fuck.
The kids are totally doing TikTok dances to W.C. Fields films.
You know? Yeah, sure. Olivia Rodrigo, W.C. Fields, what's the difference? red light? No. Fame, fucker! What's your Anvil rating? I'm sorry.
Oh, I give this a 1.5 out of 5 Anvils.
I'm just giving it a 1 again. It's nothing good came of any of this.
No.
This next one Mark and I disagree on. Because he apparently thinks it's the worst of the three, whereas I think it's the best of the three. But only by the slimmest margin.
Yeah, like, it's
We'll explain why when we sum it up in the end, but Bunny and Claude, We Rob Carrot Patches, is this last one. Came out on November 9th, 1968. Mark, you apparently found a glut of things on this day, right?
Yes, I did. In regards to music, if it's okay if I cover the music one, Joe Cocker's version of the Beatles' song With the Help of My Friends became the number one single in the UK.
Da, 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 da.
It's a good version.
I actually really like it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I wish I could isolate the part of that song where you know the second time they do the bridge where they do. And he just, instead of actually saying I need somebody to love me, just goes.
I could probably do that.
Oh God, because I want to just like, okay, Joe Cocker steps on a Lego. Joe Cocker gets his finger stuck in a car door. Joe Cocker has to watch 3-7 Arts cartoons.
Joe Cocker passing a kidney stone.
Joe Cocker getting cocked. Maybe he'd be into it, who knows? It was the 60s, everybody fucked everybody back then.
Yeah. Also been athletes, Jeff Brady, American NFL linebacker for the Minnesota Vikings, was also born on this day.
I've vaguely heard of him.
He's not related to the Bradys, right? It's a different Brady?
I don't think he's related to Tom. He played pretty much everywhere in the 90s. Only really started games while playing for the late 90s Minnesota Vikings teams. He was a middle linebacker type. Not exactly a top-tier player, but got the job done. Did his thing for a little while. Yeah. Everything.
And now to the fun ones.
Yes, the fun
also
ones.
Also on this day, Robert Plant weds Maureen Wilson in West Bromwich, England. They divorced in 1983.
Yeah, I was going to say, gee, I wonder if that marriage lasted. If you're marrying the lead singer of Led Zeppelin, you think there's a man who's going to stay faithful.
No, not only that, they were both 19. So this was...
That's of age.
Think about this. It was pre-Led Zeppelin, divorced in 83. They lasted the entire fucking run of Led Zeppelin until she was like, that's it, that's enough, I can't do this anymore, I don't care that your drummer friend died, I'm out.
Hey, honey, I'm starting this band called the Honey Drippers. That's it!
I draw the line there.
No more!
And speaking of divorces...
Oh my God, I saw this one. This is insane.
Serial killer John Wayne Gacy, age 26, divorces first wife Marlene Myers after 4 years of marriage.
What do you think it was that broke the camel's back? You think it was the clown makeup?
No, honey, not tonight. Not tonight. I get it with the clown makeup every single time.
Come on. No, we're not. Ah, it's fun. No, would you please get that off of there?
God damn it, John. Would it kill you to stop with the clown shit? Actually, it wouldn't.
It'd kill some other people, though. Oh, God. Happy September 11th, everybody. No, I think what happened was when she found out that her ex-husband John killed all those people, her reaction We have a dramatic interpretation of her reaction. Joe, take it away. Is that everything you had on this day? Because I got the number ones.
Well, yeah, by all means, go ahead.
All right. So the number one song in the U.S. was Hey Jude. That's not the funny part.
Okay.
Number one, all right, Hey Jude, you know, Hey Beatles, Hey Jude, you know, one of the greatest songs ever written, you know.
Great song, fantastic.
I would be remiss if I didn't point out that I just gave Light My Fire shit for going on for too long. Hey Jude maybe could be a couple minutes shorter. It turns into a jam at the end. I'd get shit from Doors fans if I didn't say something like that. So, it's okay, sweethearts, you're both too long. Number one song in the UA, number one song in the UK.
It was
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Not by Ennio Morricone. It was by another composer named Hugo Montenegro, who decided to make a more pop-oriented version of the theme to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly that sounds a little different from the one you know and love, you know, because the theme is, you know, but this is a more like upbeat, up-tempo, like more, almost like a dance beat behind it. This was a number one hit in the UK. So, it advantaged the Beatles.
Always.
What else do you want? Not even because there's a weird novelty pop song cover of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly theme. It's just, if it was Ennio Morricone, I'd think about it. If it was the original, it would be like, oh, probably that then. But, you know.
I'm confused. Because I just said that Joe Cocker's With the Love of My Friends became the number one single in the UK, and yet this song was the one in the UK. So, like, did the song come out that week?
Maybe. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Let's just assume that Joe Cocker was number one, and then he was immediately taken off the charts by this pop cover of The Good, the Bad, the Ugly theme, and his reaction, of course, was... And then he murdered some people. And they're like, all right, we'll make it number one again. And then somewhere a clown from a couple countries over was like, nice job.
Hey.
John Wayne Fonzarelli.
Exactly. Okay. So I'm looking here on the official singles chart. This is from officialcharts.com. It says here, number one was With a Little Help from My Friends. This is for the week of November 5th through November 11th. So this would fall in line with that. Number two was Those Were the Days by Mary Hopkin. Went down number two, by the way. And number three was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly by Hugo Montenegro.
Okay, so let's just say that Joe Cocker was number one, and Hey Jude still wins.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, absolutely. Every time.
So... Bunny and Claude, We Rob Carrot Patches was directed by Robert McKimson, which was his first Warner Brothers cartoon since False Hair, back before everybody left. They was like, all right, Robert, we need somebody who knows what he's doing. All right, I don't, but thanks. Written by Cal Howard. Billy Strange wrote and sang the opening theme song. Pat Woodall voiced Bunny of the Bunny and Claude duo, and they assist Mel Blanc, who is in this one. Mark... Have you seen the movie this short is based on?
With the great Warren Beatty? No, but I've seen clips of it.
Okay, because I have several times. I saw it in both high school film appreciation classes I took. I saw it again in a later college film course. I've seen this more times than I need to. Bonnie and Clyde is more notable for what it did for the movies than it is for anything it actually is. It's big because this is the movie that sort of jump-started a lot of the new Hollywood schools of thought, and that it's able to be this big, violent, anti-establishment, almost, like, Hollywood movie. And it does a lot that's really interesting in how it depicts this, and it would really pave the way for a lot of similar, a lot of what the movies were in the 1970s and early 1980s, and paving the way for how it is now. As it is, though, it's repetitive. A lot of the movie is just, all right, they shoot some people, there's shouting, Gene Hackman is shouting, Warren Beatty is shouting, Estelle Parsons, who plays Gene Hackman's wife, is shouting and crying, and mostly crying, and then shouting again, and shrieking. And then there's the banjo music that whenever they do a robbery, and then they do this, the rinse and repeat, and then, oh, the sheriff's coming after him. I wonder if they're going to get him. They're coming pretty close. And then more of the, and then things start to go wrong. It's an all right movie. You know, I suppose it's a good movie, but it was very much a cultural phenomenon, which is why Warner Brothers decided to adapt a Looney Tunes cartoon from it. The subtitle is a reference to the slogan they had. You know, this is my name's Clyde Barrow. This is my wife Bonnie. We rob banks. Yeah, and this begins with a song written by Billy Strange, and the song is amusing, but in a very 70s novelty of it all kind of way.
Carrots was like golden in the Oklahoma sun, but these rabbits, they was bold ones, and they grabbed them on the run, those carrots. Oh, the sheriff was a-comin', but they'd stop to leave their sign. They'd spelled it out in bullets in the sheriff's cars behind. It said, Bunny and Claude, we rob carrot patches.
Yeah, that's not great. And it's done over one of many montages of these bank robbers that rob carrot banks, and they're scouring all the land for all the carrots, and you know, they're two cute bunny designs that look nothing like bugs because I can't do bugs cartoons, and then they have this sheriff character that's after him. Why is the sheriff purple? Does he have a skin condition or something?
Oh, that was your main concern, not what happened to you, Yosemite Sam?
Yeah, it's basically lesser Yosemite Sam.
Sorry, Sheriff, we didn't see you.
Oh, that's all right. By the way, where's your car?
Right over there.
I'll tote it over there for you.
Thank you, Sheriff.
My pleasure, ma'am. That's what I...
You know, it's you know, one of those damn things where it's like, you know... Yeah, sure. It's Yosemite Sam's cousin, Unfunny Larry.
It's just not ideal. But yeah, so the whole thing is that it's very much like the movie. And there's lots of montages of Bunny and Claude robbing general stores and things, and the sheriff's going after them, and then mildly okay gags happen. And like, we have this sort of, like, the back and forth between the sheriff and the shop owner as they realize what we already knew from the start, that Bunny and Claude robbed their bank and then got the sheriff to help load their car. It's not funny at all. I mean, it's like, okay, do we really need to take other time for other people to figure that out?
Oh, yeah. Was that the line, that was Bunny and Claude?
Say that again.
That was Bunny and Claude.
Yeah.
Which...
Riveting stuff.
The exterior shot of Bunny and Claude apartment looks like it was drawn by children. Yeah.
And there's a couple of gags that weren't very good in between the apartment and that. Like there's the whole thing where there's a car chase and they just turn the car around and plow right into the sheriff. Where's the humor in that? That's not clever at all. It's just, okay, bam, and then the next gag. And then this apartment thing where they, you know, the whole thing about Bonnie and Clyde is that they kept having different hideouts and things. So it's like, okay, where are Bunny and Claude? At their apartment. Like, it's like you're making it easier for people to find you. It's like you're not thinking through the cartoon. But yeah, the sheriff, as he pounds the door, sounds a hell of a lot like Yosemite Sam. I said in my notes we could have had Sam in this, that'd be funny, but I realized that maybe Seven Arts would just fuck him up.
Yeah, it would be a lot of like, you know, like later era. You know what it'd be like? The Patty Freeling Yosemite Sam cartoons. Of course it's a rip-off Yosemite Sam cartoon. Robert McKimson has experience doing ripoff Yosemite Sam.
We've covered a couple.
As we'll get into later. This isn't the first time he's done something like this, and I'm surprised that Freeling has let McKimson live this down.
Well, it wasn't enough to get mad at him for.
Which again, just all joking aside.
I like this cartoon.
Frizz must have been pissed off at McKimson, right? Like, I don't care who you are. If you create a character, and then one of your coworkers you work with does more cartoons where it's clearly a ripoff of your character. Yes, it's cartoons, it's stupid, it's ha-ha, whatever.
You could just ask me if you want the character.
Exactly, or something like that. You'd be like, what the hell? Dude, like, you're fucking ripping me off.
Yeah, what the hell?
It's like, well, you weren't using him. Like, yeah, I wasn't using him because I was making Pink Panther cartoons or whatever the fuck. Anyways.
The one big laugh I've had in this entire covering any of these episodes is the gag where he pulls out a gun and he goes, you know, come out, you rat! And then a panicking rat emerges with his hands up, shaking. Not you!
It's stupid, but I do get it.
It's very funny, actually. It's weird showing up in this cartoon, which isn't.
I did like, because the sheriff gets thrown out the window a bunch of times, like a trap door through a window. And I like the runner of the cat in the trash can. I like that. Just like the cat sees the cop going down, it's like, oh no, and then goes to the trash can, cut to the next slide. Like, there's one where the cat's trying to push the trash can away so he doesn't.
Stop messing up my home.
I like that.
Yeah, that's at least pretty decent.
I like that.
But yeah, gags like here where the sheriff runs right out the window. It would be funny if the animation were better. Like, there's a gag here where there's like a piano falling or something, and you're just waiting for it to land on the sheriff. It's so badly timed. It's like, okay, it can land now. It can land. It's too drawn out. Just dragged.
Yeah, it's not fun. And then there's this moment where they're both in their cars, and Bonnie and Clyde drive through a roadblock, which is an actual block. They drive through it, and then the letters spell out, and I quote, "The sheriff is a fake."
That didn't work.
The fuck's a fake?
It's like a low tier insult that you could get away with.
Why? You can't just say the sheriff is a fuck?
Apparently not. You did.
Why not? Why do they have to lose? Anyway, sorry.
There's a bit that you skipped over there where they're in the car, and it's actually very fascinating because it's almost a direct reference to the movie, because there's an exchange. You know, Bunny whispers something to Claude, and Claude just replies, "Is that all you think about? Carrots?" Which is very funny if you've seen the movie. You see, one of the main pieces of conflict that they portray Clyde Barrow and Bonnie Parker having is that. And, you know, because they meet, you know, they meet in happenstance and they become lovers. And the one piece of conflict as they become this bank robbing duo is that Bonnie wants, you know, is obviously sexually attracted to Clyde. And Clyde is impotent. And this is a very important theme of this movie about how he can't completely please her. He can't completely be what she wants, even if she is, you know, obviously, oh, I'm going to shoot up all these banks with you and kill all these people. But, you know, it's about legacy, and they probably will never have a legacy because Clyde won't be able to reproduce. This is a dumber way of doing that theme of like, is that all you think about sex, or is that all you think about carrots? It's a decent way of giving a reference to the movie. It's just only people who'd seen the movie would get that. And you're doing this for kids at this point, and the kids haven't seen Bonnie and Clyde. They know of the people they're making fun of. Okay, you know, these bank robbers, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, you know, because they're real people. But they won't know about the actual movie they're doing. So I got it, but they wouldn't, and you didn't.
No, I didn't. Clyde being unable to have children, was that a real thing, or was that like, oh, well, she's dead, we can make up shit about her?
No. Clyde, not she, no, no, Clyde, the not she's dead. Clyde, I don't know if that's based off of anything in fact. I don't know if it's something the writers made up or not. But all I know is that in the movie, Warren Beatty is ashamed about his impotence.
Oh, sorry. Right. Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, maybe that was a real thing. I honestly gives him more of a character and gives him more nuance and actually helps him. But I think there's a chance that could have happened in real life. I'm not sure.
Next up, so exactly how incompetent was Clyde during the lovemaking?
Impotence, not incompetent.
What's the difference?
What did you think? Hang on. Wait. What did you think I meant? Do you think that, like, everybody, let's go. And he just, like, accidentally, like misses her? Like, he jams into the bed instead? Like he's incompetent? He's like, all right, he's just fumbling around in the dark? Like, no! He's shooting blanks, Mark.
Yeah, during the bank robbery. But what did he do in the bedroom?
So this next gag.
No. Just goes like, okay, buddy, here I come. Slips on banana peel, falls out the window.
I diagnose you with being really clumsy. Oh, damn. My father was the same way.
Buddy and Clyde ran into my Blake Edwards.
You know, it's around the same time. He could have honestly done it.
Yeah.
Where it's Julie Andrews and Robert Preston or somebody trying to do bank robberies and failing miserably. All while Peter Sellers tails them.
No, but I knew what you meant, but yeah.
Sorry. This isn't gonna work, hon. I'm incompetent. I know that, but what about your dick? Almost there. Right. Almost there. Alright, last gag in this cartoon is the gag that the sheriff is going to dress up as a giant carrot and plant himself in the earth. What is wrong with this guy? But the whole thing is that he leads the trap for him. Yeah.
He's... I'll tell you what's wrong with him!
Oh, brother. Oh, Lord. Get it out. No, I want to know.
He's what Clyde has.
Oh, he's incompetent.
No, the actual thing.
Oh. Okay, he's being played by Warren Beatty.
No, he's...
So he's...
What's the actual
so
word
he's impotent, which means he dresses up in vegetables?
Yes.
I think we're talking about two different things, Mark.
No, he's impotent because planting himself in the ground is the only way he's able to spread his seed. There you go.
Okay. Now, the whole thing is that they go over... And because he's just a trap with all these carrots there, and they pull him out of the ground dressed as a carrot. And I kind of like the exchange they have with the sheriff about the carrot suit, now they flatter him. It's actually kind of well written, even if it does lead to just a really easy way around where they just kick him back into the ground. But, like, it at least amused me, the final gag. Because there's the sheriff dressed as a giant carrot, and he's like, oh, you look great in that. Oh, thanks, my wife made it. little funny details like that, but, you know.
Yeah.
And then it just ends. Just stops.
Yeah.
Apparently
this was a two-parter, or they meant it to be longer or something? I don't know. But, give me 5 thoughts for this one, man. You clearly liked it more than I did.
I mean, this had a few more interesting things than previous ones, like an interesting concept, a sheriff character that I could see what they were doing with him and had some decent moments. A surprisingly nice support performance by Pat Woodell as Bunny. Some good gags here and there. I just wish I knew the main characters better. And there's still a lot of pacing, plotting, and animation issues. Like, it's just very much, oh, and then there's a montage, and this happens, and it fails, and there's a montage. It's not very well structured. I think it's more memorable than the last two, but it still doesn't make it a very good cartoon.
Yeah, I will say that knowing this was by McKimson, it did kind of put me at ease a little bit, because yes and yes, he's not that good of a Legends director, but at least we know what he's capable of. And Criminal Credits do. We're only in an actual apartment slash house for a little bit of this cartoon. So he's not entirely stuck in his wheelhouse. But yeah, directing-wise and animation-wise, it is a little bit, it is better than the other two. But I guess the guy was a little bit better, but not by much, in my opinion. It's not like you could watch this cartoon and go, oh, this was the Seven Arts division? Like a surprise? No, no. You can still tell it's Seven Arts, but I guess by a hair, no pun intended, it's a little bit better, I guess.
Yeah. I'm giving it, I initially had it a little higher. I'm giving it a 1.5 out of 5.
I'm also giving this a 1.5 out of 5.
Slimmest margin.
Yeah.
All right, let's see if you guys have anything at all to say about any of these three. First one we have here is from Harry the Man 419, who says, yes, the Seven Arts era is bad, and I am not denying that. On the other hand, they were at the very least able to make new characters. They aren't good, but they're more innovative than just Daffy and Speedy Shorts. Yes, but they also aren't good, and they don't rely on someone we're at least somewhat comfortable with. So bringing in someone like Merlin the Magic Mouse out of nowhere and just saying, hey, here's our character, have fun, like it's not as effective as, like, okay, it's a Daffy cartoon, or okay, it's Speedy Gonzales, we at least know who that is. Even if they do nothing with the character, it's like, okay, you know who that is, instead of just like, all right, there's this mouse that's W.C. Fields, and that's the short.
Yes, and if I may say so, because we said in this episode, like, oh, he's in Tiny Toons University, yeah. How they do that. The joke they do with Merlin the Magic Mouse at Tiny University is A+. It's the funniest fucking thing.
Oh, it's great. It just came out as we were recording comments. Because it's proof that the new Looney Crews are able to make fun of themselves and be like, yeah, we did try that. Wasn't that awful? And they're able to be honest and be like, yes, Merlin the Magic Mouse was something we tried and didn't work. And we can still curate that and show that, even if it didn't work. Which is humble of them.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, because that was something we praised the 90s writers for. It's like, oh, look, loony writers.
Yes.
Fans writing these loony shows with loony references.
Yeah, like Buddy's in here. Or the plot point in Tiny Toons about losing the Oscar to Bugs. And, you know.
So it's nice to know that in this new generation of loony writers, which, call us, please, call us.
Please.
But generation of loony writers that can go like, oh no, let's do a joke about Merlin the Magic Mouse. It's like, hell yeah. That's good hands. I like that. Alright, so a comment here from James Irish, using the Pemmy and James pod account. Now, he does admit that he hasn't rewatched these. But two things come to mind when he sees the Seven Arts cartoons and how they operate.
Yeah.
One, somehow these still aren't the worst cartoons with the Seven Arts name attached to them. Whenever you guys are feeling masochistic, just go looking for Johnny Cypher in Dimension Zero. Yes, we talked about that when we were on your episode.
Y'all warned us of those, yeah. I have no real desire to immerse myself in that tripe.
And two, you guys aren't saying two, and this might be an interesting bonus episode for you to tackle. Concurrently with this era, Gold Key Comics held the rights to the Looney Tunes for comic periodicals. Had a smattering of old issues from that run, and was like a Funhouse mirror version of the 50s shorts. Recognizable, but very off, including, these really been insane. The Roadrunner has kids, and they all spoke in rhyme.
Just like the original Roadrunner in the comics.
Yeah. Tweety had a family reunion where his Texan uncle practically took over the story. Ah, so another Yosemite Sam ripoff, essentially. Yeah. And one particularly strange and unfunny story where Daffy Duck just decides his big thing is talking to broccoli are the examples that come to mind.
What in tarnation?
I'm going to need more context for the broccoli one. If you can send a screenshot of those over, James, that'd be great. Because what the fuck?
Oi.
They did adapt. Oh, they adapted the Bunny and Clyde short with the plot hook of Bugs going to see it at a drive-in while angrily protesting about the short giving rabbits a bad name. Now, you see, that's actually funny. Like,
I'm fine with that.
I'm not saying that we've improved the short, but that's actually pretty cool. My point is that as pedestrian and uninspired as the Seven Arts era of Looney Tunes is, it can always be worse. Yeah.
Yes.
The thing with me when it comes to comic book adaptions of a classic IP, and I'm talking about this from a Disney Adventures reader as a child, I never considered the comics canon. I was like, oh, these are extra stories. So, as weird as those are, and I gotta be honest with you, I think if I was a kid and I came across a Looney Tunes comic where the Roadrunner is speaking and it's in rhyme, I think even I would be like, the fuck is this shit? What? No, that's not how it is. Yes,
that is.
That's not how it goes.
That is how the character was created before he started being in the shorts. But, yeah, I mean, compared to the actual shorts, it's like, oh, what the hell is this? I mean, I will say, I must have them somewhere. I collected a couple of the DC Looney Tunes comics when I was a kid. So, those are cool. You know, they had the right idea.
Yep. Maybe one of these days we'll do an episode on the Looney comics. I just have to get really good at my video editing skills. Or you. I don't know.
I'm a video editor.
I don't know. Let's see what we can do with that. Because that's one where, like, it needs a video editor. It can't just be like...
Yeah.
And then on panel 3, Bug says... It's like, no.
Yeah.
That's getting really old. But, no, thank you so much for your comments this week, guys.
Yes. Much appreciated. Especially for us having to get through all of these. No, we appreciate the help.
Yes, and we hope you enjoyed this episode, because we sure as hell did.
Yes, we did. Before we get to what we're doing next week, we just want to take this opportunity to thank the people that have subscribed to our Patreon. People such as TriScrew, Andrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the guy, not the drink. They have helped us out by pledging anywhere from $1 to $5 on our Patreon, and they get perks like being thanked in the middle of an episode, in addition to their commentaries that they get that we record, as well as early access to episodes and handwritten letters from me, and also playbacks of live streams. So if you want to become a patron just like those four that I thanked in the middle of this episode, you can follow our patron at patreon.com/TNQAF.
You know what, Jordan? I'll be honest with you. I think I need to be re-educated on what makes a good Warner Brothers cartoon.
Well, as luck would have it, we actually have a good remedy for that. Because next week, we are actually going back to the very cool late 90s, early 2000s era of Cartoon Network programming to give you some episodes of Toonheads. Yes, Toonheads, which was a weekly or recurring, somewhat hour-long historical documentary series about the history of Warner Brothers Animation.
We're looking at two episodes from the Toonheads series. Ones we're looking at are The Years Elmer Was Fat.
Yes.
Which is a funny title. And also, like, we haven't looked at a lot of that era. You know, we looked at one, which is...
Wabbit Trouble.
Yeah, so... And the one that was on the Looney Tunes Gone Collection Volume 1, Take a Drink, Toonheads, The Lost Cartoons.
Yes, so one that I am at least very much familiar with. But, Yeah, no, it's a good, you know, it's something that we have somewhat some nostalgia for, because I remember watching a couple episodes of it back when I was a kid, after the Tex Avery Hour, after the Bob Clampett Hour or whatever. It's a very good, well-curated piece of, you know, history of cartoons, and I'm glad the Cartoon Network commissioned stuff like that as they were, you know, making some of the best cartoons of its era. So, yeah, we're going to have fun with that, and it'll be definitely better than this week.
Yeah, so I need to be reminded what good cartoons are, and those two episodes definitely demonstrate, like, actual good shorts. So stay tuned for those. Yes. That's the end of this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me at Tall Guy Schmidt.
If you'd like to keep up with the podcast or give your thoughts for next week's episode, you can follow us at that_Looney, both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title. We are the first result.
You can also find our podcast wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We're also on YouTube. And have our YouTube channel where we play the hits and give you videos based on some of our best bits and shorts as well. Go on YouTube and take a look at those. We really like what we've been doing for you guys. Also, we have a TikTok presence that we're trying to do more things with the short form edited stuff. So look out for us there. And as always, find us at patreon.com/TNQAF if you want to contribute to our podcast.
Yeah, it's got some fun stuff over there. We just did a commentary on the Muppet movie, which was a much more fun and happy experience than having to watch these seminar
shorts. Oh, by miles. Yes.
All right. So until next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan. And I think that my reaction to all of these cartoons can best be summed up by Mr. Joe Cocker.
Am I still fired?
No. You gotta stomach the rest of this with me anyway.